sons of Cryos.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Judd.
And you're listening to the
Sons of Cryos. You know, I like it better when we say, we are the Sons of Cryos. Maybe it's just my interaction with Jared.
That could be it. He tends to have an effect with loud, deep voices. Okay. Well, that being said, we have an interview today with Jared Sorensen.
And John Wick.
From Wicked Dead Brewing Company.
They make such games as Lacuna and Cat and 30. What else? What other?
Dragon, Enemy Gods.
Necronomopoly.
I can't say it either. Sorry.
Necronomopoly is a cool game. I just actually downloaded the PDF. And in it, it takes your basic Monopoly board and gives it like Lovecraftian names, you know? And then when you become, you can lose all of your sanity and become a cultist. And then you start moving
backwards.
You start moving backwards along the board.
Nice.
Very nice. Anything to alter boring Monopoly is good.
And then there's also Inspectors and
Against the Reich.
Schism and all sorts of really cool games. And The Secret Lives of Gingerbread Men, is it?
That is Annie Rush, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she is also in Wicked Dead Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm. And we get them to talk a little bit about the games that they have coming up. So that's nice. Nice to hear what's brewing over there.
Brewing.
So to speak.
Right. Nothing dead, I hope.
Or wicked.
So our interview was wonderful, and I think all of you are going to really enjoy it.
But that's not all we've got for you today. We also have our two segments. We've got Good Sentences.
And we have Game Master Tools.
Yes, with the jingle's not quite ready yet for that.
No, the jingle's going to be in.
Oh, we have a jingle?
Yeah, we're using the jingle.
Rock and roll. Do I get to sing it?
No, you don't get to sing it.
I'm going home. I'm taking my headphones and I'm going home. We've got our segments. And I think that's all we're going to have time for today, do you think? What, do you want to squeeze something else in there?
Yeah. No, I don't...
Good sentences and GM's tools, and that's it?
Yeah.
All right.
We also have to talk about our contests.
Right.
But I think that's about it.
All right. Rock on.
Okay. So, without further ado, here's our interview. I'd like to start off with first saying that we are interviewing Jared Sorensen and John Wick today.
From Wicked Dead Brewery. And, guys, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on the Sons of Cryos.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting us.
My pleasure.
It is good to be here.
Great. Jared was one of the first people to email me and be supportive when we first started this little shindig, so it's very nice to have you guys on.
And in the very beginning, he says, Sons of Cryos.
That is him.
Yeah, yes, I certainly indeed. Do.
Well, when Jared designs his big, epic, heavy metal science fiction game, there will definitely be some mention of the Sons of Cryos somewhere in there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude. that'll so appeal to my, like, Jersey Shore, big hair, hairy chest band roots. That'll be
great.
It
would have to be a some kind of dragoon of starbirds.
All right.
Which makes no sense because you have no idea what I'm talking about, but it's a band. There's a band. German band, they sing about space robots from Atlantis.
When I asked Jared...
It's pretty awesome.
When Jared and I first started hanging out and we started comparing musical tastes, I'm being the 70s prog rock guy and Tom Waits fan, and Jared said, you know, it's really not heavy metal unless there's a guy in a big poet shirt with leather gloves and big boots that come above his knee, and he's standing with one foot up on the feedback thing with a microphone in one hand and a broadsword in the other, singing about blood, steel, and honor. If it doesn't have that going on, it's not metal. And I went, well, Jared and I are soul brothers.
and that sounds like a hell of a role-playing game. I'm sold. I'd like to pre-order that if you guys don't mind. If you could just take that down.
You got to start writing it now, Jared.
Yeah, it's online. It's actually Letter Gold. But I didn't finish it. But it's online. You can Space Pirates.
I will look that up. So you gentlemen both have day jobs in the gaming industry, and then like Wicked Dead is kind of I don't know. What is, where does that, you know, where is that? Is that a, consider that a hobby? Do you consider that a vent? What, I guess I'm, the question is about like day job versus Wicked Dead.
I don't, it's an excuse for Jared and I to save up enough money to see each other once a year at Gen Con.
Yeah, really.
That's how it started, actually. It was me and Jared saying, you know, well, it was Jared kept pestering me to say, you know, we should start a game company together. We should start a game company together. And the initial client, or the initial idea was that we would start a game company together that would be online and follow Jared's business model so that we could pay for Gen Cons. We could pay for the flight and the hotels. We could see each other once a year because mm-hmm. we lived on opposite sides of the country.
Yeah.
And that's how it started, and boy, it just exploded.
Absolutely. Jared, anything to add to that?
It is good to be here, Judd.
All right, guys, I got a question for you. Now, Wicked Dead Brewing does not include just the two of you, am I correct?
That's correct.
Who else is involved?
We have young. We always have to preface her name with young. Young up and coming superstar Annie Rush, who's a friend of John's and also a friend of mine now since I've met her. And John could probably tell you more about her rocket-like shot.
Well, I think you should.
I should? Okay. I don't remember how I found out about her games. I think you sent me a copy, and I was like, great. You know, John's friend is, you know, just getting into gaming, and so she decided to write some games, and mm-hmm. they're very cute, and yeah, whatever. And I had the PDFs on my machine for a few months, and I didn't look at them because I'm a bad friend. and then we started talking about them, and I met her at Gen Con, and she sold out on like, what was it, like Friday morning or something? It was crazy.
Awesome.
It was like Friday before noon. She sold out of Run Robot Red, I think. And, yeah, they're really cool games. She's really talented. And it's interesting because she doesn't have a heavy gaming background. So she doesn't know what not to, you know, what she's not supposed to do, which, of course, is the best thing to do.
Right.
And she's cool. She's just cool. She's really into the idea of gaming. And, yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see what she comes up with next. She has a whole bunch of games on our site now.
Do you guys have any projects that the three of you have worked on together?
Well, that's kind of interesting. In a way, we do work on things together, even in a real tangential way. I send things to Jared all the time. Jared sends things to me all the time. Annie, you know, is always asking me questions. I'm always showing her things. 30, my you know, was as well. It is what it is because of feedback from Annie and Jared. You know, I mean, so
that was a pretty that was a pretty big game for Wicked Dead. It was a pretty big game for anybody, but for Wicked Dead in particular.
That's why it's the, you know, it's the biggest thing I've done for Wicked Dead, but it's not going to be the biggest. There's going to be another, but we can talk about that later.
All right.
Yeah, I've done. I mean, I'll give John feedback and mostly to say, you know, what do you do, you know, why do you need a friggin' economy system in your game when it's about, you know, when it has nothing to do with that? So I hit him with the wake-up stick now and then. That's the extent of my help. Occasionally I'll do, like, graphic stuff. I'll say, oh, here's a cool logo or, you know, whatever. Here's some ideas.
But that's valuable. I mean, that's not a small thing to say that.
But it's not, you know, one of these days I guess we're going to, like we were going to collaborate on Tooth and Claw, and that worked out wonderfully, huh, John?
Yeah, it worked out really good.
This is me. Yeah, I'm not going to have carnivores in my game. This is John. You're an idiot. And so on and so forth. You know, basically repeat that for 2 weeks. And carnivores.
Tooth and Claw was something that Jared had already worked on a lot. And I got
very,
really intrigued.
Very generous with a lot. I thought about it a lot.
But I came along and Jared and I had just met, and we were really excited about each other's stuff. Jared said a lot of very nice things about Orc World, and I had taken a look at the stuff that Jared had on his site, and I was very impressed with the stuff he had. And we were really different at that time, and I think we still are in a lot of different ways. But I mean, the Wicked Dead Brewing Company is really a mutual admiration society. And so when Jared and I got together to do, I said, hey, can I help you with this? And he said, well, sure, all I've done is really think about it. And it really demonstrated how differently we approach the design process. And eventually it came down to, you know, us deciding that, that Jared just had better do this by himself. Because
that happens a lot. Jared better do that by himself.
Well, Jared is, you know, the idiot savant of the game industry. He really can't
do it.
He designs games like nobody else's business. Can we
give him that title now?
Yeah.
No, he does things in such. It's funny because talking with Jared is like talking. I mean, is like talking. I imagine would be talking with somebody like David Lynch or Jared's favorite director, Cronenberg, which is they're so doing their own thing that it's difficult for them to communicate exactly what they're doing. They have to show it to you. And then you go, oh, God, this is brilliant. I really understand what you're doing now. But having Jared try to explain one of his own games, that doesn't work. You really need to play it and read it and play it, and then you really see what he was trying to communicate and what his game communicates so much better.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a quote from, I think it's some French director. I want to say Truffaut or Godard. It might be somebody else. But he said the best way to review a movie or to critique a movie is to make another movie. And that's exactly what I do. I don't like Call of Cthulhu. In fact, I think it's a terrible game. So instead of, you know, writing a review on RPGNet, which I've only written one review of a game in my life, and it was for Opinions back in like 2000. It was on D&D 3rd edition because I just thought it was cool. It was a good game and I wanted to write about it.
Yeah.
And it was the only review I've ever done because, one, I'm not very good at them, and two, I'd much rather say, okay, instead of saying what I didn't like about the game, here's what I would have done. And that's what I did with Inspectors. It's basically, hey, here's how I would do some of the similar things in Call of Cthulhu, except do them, in my mind, right.
Right.
You guys have quite a few titles for Wicked Dead Brewing. Can I ask you what your favorite ones are?
Well, I'm sorry, what was the last bit of that?
Can I ask you what your favorite ones are, each of you?
Oh, wow.
Of our own or of each other?
Yeah, both.
Well, I think I've said this before. My favorite thing that Jared's done has been Lacuna, because Lacuna is for anybody who doesn't know. Again, this is a game that it's like trying to explain. Hey, the new David Lynch movie, Lost Highways out. Oh, what's it about?
Yeah, I have that same problem when I try to pitch Lacuna to like a group or to whatever. I'm just gonna have to spring it on somebody. Just have to say to the guys, "Hey guys, show up because we're gonna play something." And
Lacuna is, and we worked really hard on the. Or I worked really hard on coming up with a pitch for Lacuna because everyone should play it once. Is that Lacuna is playing mystery agents, like Jared said, mystery agents injected into the human collective unconscious to hunt down serial killers. And while
that's what you do in the game, but that's not what the game's about.
Right.
So there's an exoteric meaning of or way to play, you know, Lacuna, and then there's this esoteric thing that's going on that is not obviously stated and is not easy to communicate. But essentially, in Lacuna, you play.
Don't tell them.
Okay, I won't.
You're gonna wreck it. Don't tell them what it's about.
Don't give us the whole puzzle piece. Then what's the point?
I'm just being coy. I'm sorry.
But I mean, Lacuna is wonderful. It's about symbols and the relationship with humans and with humanity and language and about what it means to be human
Thanks. Now I'm transhuman space. I was going to say the same thing about 30. It's a game about symbols and humanity and what it means to be human.
So is 30 your favorite, Jared?
Actually, I haven't read any of John's games. It's kind of strange. No, my favorite thing John has written... man, that's actually kind of tough. 30 is really cool. 30, I didn't read all of, so I really can't say I thought it was the best thing. Because I really want to play it. And I just didn't want to know all the secrets. Man, this is a really boring interview with me if I can't come up with something. I'm going to say Cat.
Yeah, I agree
with
that.
Because it's such an simple idea, and it's so easy to sell to somebody.
Yeah.
We found that out at Gen Con.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I picked it up at Gen Con.
Jeff actually ran it this past Saturday for a big group, including a father and his daughter. Like his nine-year-old daughter.
Yeah, and it was just wonderful.
It automatically tells you. I mean, aside from all the dream elements and the magical elements and the monster elements, you know, even without that stuff, you know how to play. It's called Cat. Okay,
right.
I know how to play.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if you have a cat. It doesn't matter if you like cats. It was one of the first games I ever played with John back in, I think it was Dundracon or something in the area. And I still remember my character, and I remember exactly what I did in that game. And it was fun. It was just really fun. I didn't really like the system back then. John cleaned it up quite a bit. No doubt because of my stunning insight. But it's just a cool little game, and it's the one game I can look at and really say this game is the one to bridge the hobby divide, the one between people into the hobby and people who aren't even aware that it exists.
I agree with that absolutely.
It's interesting that you mentioned cat haters, because I actually ran a game once for a guy who hated cats, and he loved the game.
Huh.
So.
Yay.
And you both have projects that are kind of in the works right now. Jared's got Dark Pages, and John has I'll just let you talk about it. Jared, you want to talk about what you've got in the barrel?
Sure. It's a game called Dark Pages, and just a little backstory to it. I don't want to take too long because I'm prone to, as people who've seen me at panels will know, I'm prone to rambling. I was thinking about a superhero game that I wanted to do for quite some time, and it was it started off as this game called The Code, which is on my website right now, Memento Mori Theatrics, memento-mori.com, if you want to check it out, in the free game section. It's free because it deserves to be free. It's kind of interesting, but it's not complete. It's not ready for prime time. And it's a game where you play people who dress up like superheroes and perform civic or vigilante or somehow some kind of action in their community. Mm-hmm. And they don't have superpowers, and it's not like Batman. Because contrary to popular belief, Batman has superpowers, but I don't want to get into that. you're just normal people who put on masks and tights and adopt these comic book personas in order to fulfill some need. And I really wanted to go farther with that. But it's hard to do a superhero game because what do you do that hasn't already been done?
Right.
You can essentially there's two things you can do. The first is the Champions game, which is essentially a war game without a board. It's very much into tactics. It's very much into kind of building the ultimate character out of, you know, this many points, just like, you know, when you're playing Warhammer, you want to build the best army you can out of, you know, your 200 points or whatever.
Right.
And so I didn't want to do that. Plus, I can't design like that. I'm not good at that kind of stuff. I'm horrible at tactics. And I didn't want to go the other route, which is kind of the meta comic book game, where it's basically you sit down and it'd be the comic book equivalent of Primetime Adventures,
right?
Which is a cool game, but you know where you essentially in that game you're generating a TV show or a series, and in games like Capes and With Great Power, it's very much looking at the game as a comic book being written, and it's very aware of that. And I didn't want to do that either, so I said okay. Superheroes. Gee, you can do just about anything in a superhero comic. So what if we just did one little facet of superhero comics and really limited it? And so I picked horror comics, in supernatural and crime, and just kind of the creepy, weird stuff all the way from like the 70s when they started really kind of straining at the comics code because, oh, the comics code, you know, said you couldn't do this, but you can do that if there's vampires as the enemy and not people or werewolves or whatever. And all the way up to, like, The Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, all the way up to the Vertigo stuff and all kind of the British invasion of comics with Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman, all the way up to the 90s and in this century or millennium, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So Dark Pages is that. I'm calling it graphic horror. It's not a superhero role-playing game, but it's close.
What comic books do you think would Could you name a few titles?
That it's based on?
What that you think would that you think inspired this game to get made.
Well, definitely, I've been writing these little. They're not really stories; they're just vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the characters I've introduced and keep using because he's just kind of interesting is this guy named Rainer Burroughs, and he's like a sorcerer, private eye, hard boiled, cynical, loner kind of guy. And I'd never read Hellblazer or knew much about John Constantine until somebody said, "Oh, you know, Rainer Burroughs is pretty much an American John Constantine." Excuse me. And I went out and I got the original Sins graphic novel, and I was like, "Wow, this is really cool. This is very Dark Pages like."
Yeah.
Then I read Swamp Thing. Then I went back and reread some Sandman, and I reread Sin City. I've just been devouring like that kind of feeling of comic books, reading books, interviews with Will Eisner and Frank Miller. Rereading Understanding Comics and really just kind of getting into that mindset.
Nice.
So essentially it's a superhero game without superheroes or my version of the World of Darkness. And White Wolf can contact my attorney if they want to see
it. Watch it. They're pretty feisty.
Oh, hey, that'd be awesome. Are you kidding? That'd be great. If White Wolf sued me, that'd probably be the best thing.
You know? John, do you want to talk about your project?
Okay. right now, where to start? This is something I've been working on for a very, very long time. My very first characters, I mean, even when I was, for role-playing games, or even when I was writing, you know, little juvenilia stuff, has always been about magic. And, my first role-playing characters were magic users. The Ars Magica is one of my favorite role-playing games. So I've been doing a lot of. I was talking with my ex-wife about a year ago, and we're talking about a few things. And one of the we're talking about the past, the future stuff. And one of the things we talked about was one of the first things that we really hooked up on was magic, and that when we first met, we were both very, very interested in different magical theories, different magical studies. When I went to college, philosophy was what I studied, and most specifically, I was fascinated with ethical and moral systems, and that leads you to religion, and a big rant that I used to have, which is that. I really don't understand the difference between magic users and clerics. There is no atheistic magic system in the world. All magic systems in voodoo, even hermetic magic, you know, the Catholic, Christian mysticism, Judaic mysticism, all that stuff, all the magic systems in the world invoke some kind of extra or supernatural entity. It's all magic. That's what all these things are. So I used to have a big rant about D&D. One of my big rants about D&D was the existence of a cleric and a magic user. I was like, I don't understand the difference between these two things. They're the same thing. So I was looking at... I had just turned 35, and I said, well, you know, I'm getting close to that midlife crisis thing. And
that is the age. You know, that is the age where you can legally start studying the Kabbalah, too, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And so I did. I decided I was going to have a midlife crisis, and that I was going to get religion and I was going to get faith. And so I decided to start studying magic again. Not so much that I believe in supernatural, you know, things, because I don't. I'm not so much an atheist. I'm more of an omnitheist. I love world religions. I study all of them. But I wanted to start studying magic. And you look at the things that are in Aleister Crowley's books and the Golden Dawn books and things, and you compare them with game systems, and the fact of the matter is that D&D, you take D&T, you take Hero, the new Hero, you take Rollmaster, it doesn't matter what it is. The most complicated game system in the world does not shed a single it doesn't compare at all to the kind of magic systems that the Golden Dawn people put up in the 1800s. These things are huge and complicated, and they came up with magical correspondences with everything. They took you know, the Rosicrucian Hermetic stuff from the 1500s. They slammed yoga in it. They slammed, you know, Kabbalah in it. They slammed the Goetia in it, and they made this huge universal magic system. And
I wish we had the transcripts from their equivalent of RPGNet. That would be
wouldn't that been great? Well, actually, we do. You can get letters from all these people and having arguments about things. So anyway, so I've been doing all this studying and stuff, and it's something that's always fascinated me. And so I decided that a magician has to do a great work. That's one of the things, you know, that you, in the magical tradition, you do a great work. So Agrippa wrote his great work, and Crowley wrote his great work, and all these other things. So I decided, what's my great work going to be? And, well, you know, the date 555 came up, and I decided to do a Discordian role-playing game. I might as well make my great work a role-playing game. But
nice choice.
And that's where Secret comes from, which is what it's called now and what it'll probably continue to be called. It's going to be a very, very big thing, and it's about magic. It's about specifically, it's about hermetic magic, and it's not about, and this is a distinction I've been making recently with the small circle of friends who've been looking at it and giving me feedback on it, is that it's not about magicians. It is about magic.
Huh.
And your magician creates his own magical system in the game, which means that you pretty much create your own magical system in the game. And when I was looking at Crowley and Mathers and all the Victorian occult fellows, you look at, for instance, even just the Kabbalic Tree of Life, all the different interpretations of what the tree means, what the tree glyph means, and all the connections between it, and they took the tarot cards and put it on there, and all that other stuff. They were making it up, you know. They were really just, but they weren't making it up arbitrarily. They were creating systems. They were making justifications for their systems, and sometimes the justifications are brilliant, and the insight, the magical insight that these people had, is amazing. And sometimes they were really forced, and they felt ham-handed.
Huh.
So what I want Secret to be, and what I hope it's going to be when I'm done, is that you sit down with the book, you read the book, you make a magician, and your magician takes all of this stuff, all of the Kabbalah, Hermetic, Masonic, you know, all these symbols, and puts together his magic system.
Wow.
That interacts with the world. That was my first goal, and it's been a long road, but Jared said something. Jared and I were talking about it at Gen Con this year, and we were walking to one of the seminars, and I said, it's not, because one of the things you do in the game is the grand ritual of the Kabbalah quest. You go up the Kabbalah Tree of Life, and you have adventures in each of the spheres and things. And this isn't going to make any sense to anybody who doesn't understand what I'm talking about, but that's
right.
Okay. But there's this grand ritual that you do. And when you get up to the very top, at the very bottom of the tree is mankind. At the very top of the tree is God. And when you get to the very top, you see the face of God. And one of the elements of the game is going to be that if you complete the grand ritual, if you complete the grand rite, there is a list of rules essentially, you get to change the world, because that's what the Knights Templar are doing in 30. They're healing the world. They're changing the world.
Mm.
And so in Secret, one of the things is that if your magician is strong enough and he can get all the way to the top of the tree and perform the grand rite, he gets to change the world in somehow. And I was talking to Jared about that, and I said, how do you do this in the game? And he said, it's easy. You get to change a rule.
Ooh, nice.
And I was
want to hear something really weird? We were crossing the road when I said that.
That's true.
Ooh.
Yeah, we were in...
That must mean something. Continue.
So, you know, that was something that really set me on the path, because I was kind of stuck, and I didn't know where to go from what I had. Jared said that, and it's been writing ever since.
Dude, so. That's what I do. I come in and I say the obvious thing, and he goes, "Oh, that's genius," and I'm like, "Eh, okay." Hey, Jared, Jared, I'm cold. John, put on a sweater. Oh my God, you're an idiot savant. Sure. We were talking about that magic thing and coming up with some, just kind of riffing on it. And I'm really excited actually to see the game, because if you can pull it off, it'll be really it'll be fun. I think it'll be really fun to play as a game, in not just some like grand exercise in, you know, the stuff John's into, whatever that is.
It was a lot of it's Secret is that's what it is.
All right,
sounds really cool.
Yeah, it sounds really fascinating.
You can learn more at wickeddead.com/secret.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. We actually really wanted that in there.
Yeah, we will put a link to it in our link section.
Yep.
Of the show.
Well, guys, unfortunately, I think we need to start wrapping up the interview here.
That's because we're both so long-winded. It's, you know.
Oh, it was great. You guys, that was fantastic.
Did you guys get like 2 questions in? Was that about it?
I count like 2.5, I think, is what I got.
That's okay, though. That you answered them very well, you know, and that's just wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, thank you guys. That was a lot of fun.
Cool.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. And
it was a pleasure talking with both of you.
Well, that was our interview with Jared Sorensen and John Wick from Wicked Dead Brewing. And now we're going to move on into one of our 2 new segments.
All right.
I think we're going to do Game Master's Tools first.
All right. It's GM's Tools with Jeff.
Wonderful. So, this segment, I decided to pick DM screens for the Game Master tool.
Okay.
I couldn't really think of anything that was more prominent out there. And I started a thread on RPG.net.
We'll put a link to that on the links page.
Yep. And to get some feedback and see what other people thought about screens.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I would have posted on.
Yeah, I actually didn't tell you about it because I wanted to be able to talk to you about it here.
I can't believe you got a thread by me on RPG.net. That's
oh
wild.
My God. Yeah. So there was a lot of different views about DM screens. There are people who just love them and there are people who just hate them. And one of the things that I thought that was most interesting was what people who like them use them for.
Right.
So there are people that most people I think use them to hide things behind, be it like notes or maps or occasionally dice rolls.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe, I don't know if we want to get into why people do that. Maybe some people fudge their rolls or whatnot.
Ooh, roll fudging is like a whole other segment.
Yeah, we can't get into that now. But that's one of the reasons why some people, not all,
right,
why some people use DM screens.
I actually had one player tell me, when I put up a DM screen a long time ago, he said, "Yeah, that's what you can tell Judd's a GM, because he puts up that screen between himself and the players." It was like some kind of badge. I thought that was interesting. That was something that he saw as a good thing.
What was the screen?
It was just a pretty, I think it was actually my super geeky, awesome master screen, which Jim Bryant got for me for my birthday. Jim always gets me those awesome geek gifts that I never would have gotten myself.
Nice.
And you can insert whatever panels you want into the DM screen.
Oh, now, see, I was looking, when I was doing research for this
segment. I think they're out of business now.
Yeah, I was looking for something like that.
You could go to Staples and you could probably make your own.
Yeah, oh, I'm certain you could, but that was really cool if somebody had actually made it for gamers. That's awesome.
It was cool.
Too bad they went out of business, if they did, right? So, there are also people who use them to put reference. Most people use them to put reference material on.
Yeah.
In addition to what is actually on the back of the DM screen.
Right.
And some people use them to put like notes and other things on the other side for the players.
For the players to see. You're absolutely. I had a really good time putting little pictures that I have found that I enjoyed, or art, or quotes from the prominent figures in the world. The game I was running, I like doing that. I think I did that for a Riddle of Steel game when I really needed to have those charts up in front of me. I had a lot of things I needed to reference because it's an intense system.
The thing that I found really interesting is that most, not all, of the DM screens came in box sets in the past.
Right.
I could totally be wrong here, but a lot of them came in box sets.
Yeah, and the box set that I worked on, the Midnight GM screen came in that.
Right. And that's actually the DM screen that I am currently using in whatever games I run right now.
Very nice.
Which brings up another interesting thing that people don't always use the DM screen for the game that they're running.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody might be using a White Wolf DM screen for, Burning Wheel.
Okay.
And just have their own stuff on it.
Right.
So, yeah, that was pretty neat. Hmm. And also, some people don't even use them, like, standing upright. They lay them flat.
They just lay them flat.
Yeah, lay them flat.
Put down the walls between themselves and the players.
Yeah, which
Brothers, sisters, come together.
And it's funny you should mention that, too, because there were some people who kind of mentioned this idea that Dungeon Master screens did build this barrier between the game master and the player, not like the characters or anything like that.
But between the people.
Yeah, between the people.
It definitely has an effect. You can't put a big piece of cardboard in between you and a person and not have it have some kind of social effect on some level.
Yeah.
It's interesting that some people felt that.
So I think pretty much in closing in this segment, I think, hey, guys, people, use whatever you want for game master screens. Some people make their own, and I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. Take whatever screen you can find if you use them, and put whatever you want on them. And
Jeff, when you DM, what do you use them for? What is your personal stand? You have to take a stand here, man. You're podcasting. You have to make a stand.
All right, you called me out. All right, that's fine. I use my screen to hide my notes behind.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I use it to hide my dice rolls behind. But whenever it's an important die roll,
right,
that, could, have the character's life in the balance,
mm-hmm,
I like to put that out on the table so they can see it.
All right.
That way there's no, did he fudge my character's death or whatever, I have the whole bad rap thing with the character death. So
yeah,
I have a little issue with that.
If you whacked your wife, you'll whack anyone.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I've got a DM screen story. I was playing with a new player. It was actually the Conspiracy of Shadows game, the pirate game.
Right.
And Mike hadn't been in any games with me before, and he put himself in a really dire position, which I thought was awesome. And I think I ended up telling him how much I liked it. I think he might have even gotten a Destiny point for it.
Nice.
But he was in trouble. He was in a lot of trouble. And I started rolling for his antagonists, and I was rolling right in front of him, and I could see him sweat. It was like, oh wow. Man, the DM's not bailing me out. I was like, oh no, I'm not. And it was cool. You could really see it gave the whole thing tension. I like that. I like that aspect of rolling in front of people.
Wow. Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah. One last thing that I have to say is that I also use a computer screen as part of my DM screen as well.
And
there were some other people who commented who do that as well. Mm-hmm. And
a lot of people use laptops now, yeah.
Yeah, it's really handy. You can put whatever the heck you want up there and multitask and all that, and it's great.
I think this segment needs to segue into a future segment next time. On the next show, we have to do something on fudging roles.
Yes.
Because I'm an opinionated mofo on that topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Let's do it.
So we will talk about fudging die rolls.
Sounds
next,
good.
Next show.
Sounds good.
This is Luke Crane of The Burning Wheel. You're listening to the Sons of Cryos podcast, and your computer is on fire!
So, shall we move on to our next segment?
Yeah. I do not have... I don't think... Do I get a theme song? Am I going to have a theme song?
We can insert one.
Oh, are you going to...
Something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, rock on.
No, it depends on what you want. What do you think would go with yours?
Good sentences. I don't know. Anyway, we've got a... My next segment is good sentences. Jeff kind of requested a sentence for a particular issue, and so I kind of came up with the one that I use for his particular... the problem that he brought up.
So did you come up with it on the fly, or is this something that you've used before?
This is something that I've definitely used before.
Okay.
This is particularly I use it at con adventures. So here's the deal. People sit down at a con, and they don't know who you... They have no idea who you are. They have no idea, you know, what the rules are at the table. And I don't even mean gaming rules. I just mean social rules. They are clueless. So one of the things I like to do is get everybody to introduce each other and shake hands and, like, look each other in the eye.
Oh, we have to touch?
Maybe.
Oh, that's... Yeah. Okay.
You can
I don't
bow.
Know if I'm willing to go with it. That would be better.
You could
be
bow
better.
If you wanted to. And the other thing I say is particularly my Dictionary of Moog game, they really start off in, like, all over the world. So I say if you want something to happen, if you want a scene with another player, you have to make it happen. And how you can make it happen is talking to each other and then saying, hey, Judd, we'd like to request a scene. And that's kind of this... it's really odd, but people really... You can see them kind of take a sigh of relief when they realize that I'm not expecting them to act in character the whole time. And I want them to talk to each other as gamers. It's like this weird revolutionary act. And I'm not saying I invented it, and I'm not saying it's revolutionary, but it's an odd thing that we are, you know, for a constructive purpose that furthers the game, it is more than okay. It's great to just break character for a second and say, hey, I'd really like a scene where my character and your character meet in the desert with both of our armies behind our backs, you know, just about to destroy Moo's bed. What do you say? Before the siege. And, you know, we have this climactic meeting and we'll just see where it plays out. Yeah, heck yeah. And that happens because, if you know, I say the sentence, and here's the sentence. If you want it to happen, talk to each other. And that's very much an offshoot of the sentence last week, where does anybody have any scenes they'd like to say? Except it kind of turns it back on the players. They need to, you know, need to be talking to each other. You know, is this and that goes on to, you know, if a player is about to do something and you feel like you're stepping on someone's toes, you can you know, turn to them, turn to the player, not Gragnor the barbarian,
right.
But you know, Joe the gamer, Jane the gamer. And say, hey,
right,
you know, if I take this throne and behead the king, am I totally stepping on your toes? You know, are you going to feel like I just wailed on your plot? Because I know that you kind of wanted to be king by your own hand. And maybe they'll say, yeah, that'll bug you. Maybe they'll say, no, you know what? I've had my hand on another throne. You go for it. Or, yeah, you know what? It's going to rock when I'm all bitter about it. And our characters go, you know, go toe to toe. So talk to each other. Wow. Who knew? Talk to each other as just people.
Because you can have characters who are, like, doing all of the goals or, you know, working on them or accomplishing every goal or thing that they ever wanted, and the player can be, like, totally miserable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so if the player's not happy, the character's not really going to be happy. So, yeah, you definitely got to step away from it a little bit sometimes.
I'm looking at my list of good sentences, and I think that's what many of them address, is looking at the looking the gamers in the eye and just saying, hey, you know, talk to me.
Right.
I think that's an important step that I've just started really addressing and really studying as a GM. And it becomes more important when you're at a con game, when your friends and
with
trust
totally
is an
new
issue.
People, yeah. Everybody totally new.
It becomes much more of an issue. So, yeah, the simple sentence is, if you want it to happen, talk to each other and talk to me and let's make it happen.
Yep.
And that's that.
Good sentence.
Awesome. Glad you like it.
Definitely.
All right.
Now I think we need to move on to wrap up our show, Judd.
All right.
I think that we talked last time about a contest.
We haven't gotten any entries,
no,
have we?
Nothing.
Lots of emails. A lot of very, very positive emails, which is really great.
Yeah, yeah. Did anyone mention the contest?
A few people maybe signed into my live journal and said, hey, I'm going to get something to you.
Oh,
rock and roll.
Okay. So there are people who are, like, interested.
Yeah, yeah. People are interested. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good, because I didn't know, and I thought maybe that nobody was.
So our contest is we want a commercial for your game or your favorite game. Some, you know, tribute, something that will shows how much you love it. And if you give us a commercial and we choose it as our favorite, we will play the game and record it and put it up online as a podcast.
Now, I assume we're going to have more than just you and I playing this game.
Yeah, well, I hope.
Unless, like, somebody does one for, like, Monopoly or Battleship.
Wow, that would have to be some commercial to get me to play Monopoly or Battleship and record it.
Right.
Because it'll be really riveting to hear me and Jeff saying, F6, miss. That would be a really fun podcast. That would be just great.
Especially if I move my ships.
Yeah. Cheater. So, yeah. Let's, you know, lay it on us. And the deadline was?
I'm giving you a blank stare because I don't remember. Do you remember? No, that's a blank stare as well.
November?
I think it was next show.
Next show? Okay.
I think we said
show
number...
2 weeks
from
now.
I think we said show number nine.
Number eight.
Yeah, eight. Sorry.
Show number eight.
I can't count.
Yeah, yeah. So show number eight. So that's 2 weeks from today.
Right.
All right, which is Monday, October 17th. So the deadline is November 3rd-ish? The beginning of November. Get it to us by the beginning of November.
Right.
We will have your heads. Am I threatening the audience?
I think so.
Disregard that. Yeah. Get it to us by the beginning of November. We will have a date hard and fast. And, yeah, please.
Right. So, if you want to contact us and let us know that you have a commercial or you want to email it to us or however the heck you want to get it to us, you know, put it on a record and mail it to us, you can get a hold of us at sonsofcryos@yahoo.com.
That's sonsofcryos@yahoo.com. And
that's all one word, folks.
All one word, no spaces. And it's also like what you'll get if you push the contact button on the site, right? Is there a contact button?
Contact button?
Dude.
Wait. Yeah. The contact button?
So amateur. It's our seventh show, dude. If we had a contact button, that's where it would go. sonsofcryos@yahoo.com.
You know what? You know what's going to get me here?
What's that?
What's going to get me is that if we actually look at our website and find that we have a contact button and...
You didn't know about it? Email us. That's what it says,
yeah,
email us.
Yeah, okay, so we don't have a contact button. We have an email us button.
Which is used to contact us. So, whatever, dude. That they understood.
We're done, I think.
We are cooked.
All right, everybody, I hope you really enjoyed the show.
Yeah, we had another interview, and I think next week is going to be no... I think in the next show in 2 weeks, I don't think we're going to have any interviews. I think it's going to be just us talking again. We're going to get back to basics.
You know, we'll certainly do more interviews in the future, but we'll skip a show for interviews for now.
Yep. And Jeff's got these snazzy new mics, and he's got a mixing board, and it's getting hardcore here. We're not messing around anymore.
I also have to say thank you to Skype for for working this time.
Yeah.
Because with Luke, it was horrible. A great interview with Luke, but the sound was just a pain.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we got that all worked out now, so.
You rocked.
Yeah. I am Jeff.
And I'm Judd.
We are the Sons of Christ.
Thanks for listening.